Thank you for listening to this podcast from TRE, Talk Radio Europe, your voice in Spain and around the world. For more information, please visit tre.radio.
TRE in the afternoon, presented by Hannah Murray.
Good afternoon. It's just coming up to 5 past 5 and you're listening to Women Talk. With me in the studio today, Katie Wells, Debbie Ball and Mary Harbo. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hi.
Lovely to see you all. So if anyone wants to join in, you're more than welcome. You can give us a call on 952 78 4000. You can send a WhatsApp to +34 645 99 67 95, or you can send an email to studio@tre.radio. So there's an article here talking about the lottery. I'm guessing everyone in the world has probably had that discussion. What would you do if you win the lottery? This guy, Dr. Max, in the Daily Mail has said, trust me, you do not want to win £184 million. Sounds like a strange thing to say, but he's talking about all the times where it kind of goes wrong, and the fact that winning a massive amount of money is not the same as earning a massive amount of money, and it can cause all kind of problems with friends and family and people expecting you to give them certain amounts of money, all that kind of thing. I wondered if you had thoughts on that subject.
Well, I'm going to go first.
Yeah.
Because this is really weird, because I brought on holiday with me a book which is called Just My Luck by Adele Parks.
Yeah.
Have you read that?
I've interviewed her. Yes. That was on the book. Yeah.
Had She's written recently. Loads and loads of books.
Yeah.
But this one is about a family who win a vast amount of money on the lottery. And they were part of a syndicate with two other families, but they had a falling out the week before the win happened. And this particular main protagonist of the story is telling it from her perspective, that, you know, they think the money all belongs to them, but there are these other families, and obviously it's all going to go pear-shaped, haven't finished it yet. But it does highlight, I think, it is life-changing, and not always perhaps life-changing for the better.
You can see why it can get really nasty, can't you? Which is a real shame, because it should be such a wonderful thing. And whoever wins should be able to do whatever they want with the money. Keep it all to themselves, share it with friends and family, give it to charity. You know, it should just be a lovely thing.
I think, as they say, if you've worked for it, it takes a certain amount of time for that money to come in, and people get used to the fact that you're earning more. And but if you just win that amount of money in, you know, in a moment, you're catapulted into a different world that your friends and your family and the people that you know, socialize with don't live in and can't keep up with. So I can imagine it can cause a lot of problems.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind giving it a go.
See how we cope. And I
think, unfortunately as well, I think for those that, you know, use the money quite unresponsible and end up, you know, if they have a drug addiction or alcoholism, or, you know, and I just think it can really, really change people's lives so much. But I think it just depends on, I think it really depends on the amount as well. I mean, this is a rather large amount, isn't it? Was it
184 million?
Surprising, don't you think, that they went for publicity? I mean, would you go for publicity?
Not at all. No,
I don't think I would, but I do think they had a really good point when they said they've gone for publicity, because they didn't want to put that secret onto other people. So if you're kind of, you know, giving your family, well, here's 5 million and we'll pay for your house, but don't say anything, and actually, how do you then enjoy that if everyone that you're trying to help, you know, you're asking them to keep that secret? Yeah, and it's not going to be kept, let's face it. At some point, you know, if you've come from a normal background and a normal life, living in a normal, you know, 3-bedroom semi, and the next minute you're living in a, you know, £10 million mansion, people are going to ask questions.
Exactly.
And the likelihood that you are going to stay in that 3-bed semi are pretty slim. So, you know, I think, did they do it right? I mean, time will tell, I guess, but, you know,
it would be really difficult to hide, wouldn't it?
Yeah, exactly. If it didn't come out now, it's going to come out,
later. Some point,
I mean, whether then the hype is down and they can be a little bit more discreet about it, perhaps so.
I think it would be really difficult to work out how much you wanted to either give to people. I'm talking about people.
I'm joking.
I'm talking about people you know. So family, friends, obviously depending on how big your family is, your circle of friends, all that kind of thing. But, you know, if you've won 184 million, the idea of giving someone, I don't know, $5,000 or something, they might think, $5,000, she's just won that much and she's only giving me $5,000. But then if you start giving $1 million to all your mates, the money would go down quite quickly. So I think deciding on the amount that you want to share with people would be really, really tricky.
Mm-hmm. It would be really stressful, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would.
Good job we're not going to win.
Never say never.
But don't you think a lot of people's dreams are, if they are living, for instance, in the UK, as this couple are, is to have a home in Spain, in the south of Spain.
Yeah.
And I remember, I mean, when they had the lotteries here in Spain, which were huge, they were much bigger than the UK lottery at that time, and these vast amounts of money. And it always used to be, well, straight to the Ferrari showroom. Mm. And in those days, it was Bang & Olufsen for the for this hi-fi system and the typical things that people would go and immediately buy.
Mm.
I don't know what anybody else would immediately buy.
Yeah, I thought about it a lot.
I think everybody on this planet who's read this article has thought about that at some point today and divvied up, oh, well, I'd give my family a bit of that and I'd give them that and, oh, and then would I give them some? Oh, I don't know, because that means this and that.
Yeah,
and that.
Exactly.
And how much would I have left?
It's true. And it's horrible to think, well, if I'd give them some, then I probably should give them some. Straight away, it's like, oh, I don't want to upset them. And, I mean, how awful to have to think like that. You should be able to just do whatever you want, and people should understand and respect that.
And I think the question comes as well that a lot of people would ask, how much would I give to charity and should I? And, you know, if we go back to the original kind of topic of the article in terms of if you've worked hard for your money, do people expect you to give that to charity? I mean, I know big businesses that, you know, they do that. But if you're a business, a sole trader, you've worked hard, you've got a lot of money, do people expect that? But I think they would.
If you won the lottery,
Yeah,
definitely. Most people, when you say to them, you know, what would you do with the money? Most people will say, I'd give a certain amount for charity. Because I think if you didn't, people would think, well, you wouldn't give any to charity. It would make you look really bad, wouldn't it?
It's extremely tight. Can I just say, I'd just be really happy with a car.
Exactly.
So I'm not all sweaty when I get to the radio station.
So somebody who walked here today.
Just give Katie a nice $20,000 for a nice car.
That'll do.
Maybe you should write them a letter.
Exactly.
We'll just all make a note, ladies.
Yes. So this is a serious one, an article that came out this week. It's been a big topic in the news, both in Spain and the UK and all around the world, I should imagine. Talking about the fact that Spain, a draft reform has been put forward, meaning women in Spain will be offered 3 days of menstrual leave every month. This is for women who suffer badly with period pains. This isn't actually uncommon in some Asian nations, but it's the first time a country in the West has embraced the idea. Some may regard it as a triumph for women's rights and feminism, perhaps even a welcome blast of empathy for the female condition. But the woman writing this article says, I can't think of anything more damaging to the long-term prospects of working women. She thinks that it makes women look like the weaker sex.
Mm. Okay, I'm going to start here because, yes, I can agree with what she's saying there in regards to obviously all these years that women have wanted to be treated the same as men. Mm-hmm. However, from experience myself of unfortunately experiencing extremely bad period pains, I think it's a brilliant idea. I think it's really good and I'm in total support of it. I mean, there's many a days where I've been sat in work, sat in offices and thinking, oh God, you know, I just want to go home and curl up with a hot water bottle. So yeah, I'm all for it. But I can also understand what this lady's saying about the equality.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it?
It is.
It is tough because I think it's a double-edged sword because, you know, I'm one of the lucky ones. I don't suffer. And so I would be a bit, well, if you're having it off, that sounds really wrong. If you're having the time off, why shouldn't I? You know, it then becomes, and I guess people think that when it comes to maternity leave, you know, just if you choose not to have a child and you don't have that kind of, you know, mm-hmm. 6 month or 3 month or whatever it is that you have off. I think one of the difficult things to combat what you were saying is, whilst I do think it's a nice idea for people that suffer, it's sick leave really, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
That it should be kind of captured in. Because, you know, I think as you get further up in a career, and, you know, I've sat around boardrooms with lots of men, and, you know, and it becomes difficult when you're kind of sitting there thinking, I've got to get home for the baby, and I've got to get home for the childminder, or I've got to do this, and I've got to do that. And I'm not saying all men don't have that problem, but it just becomes another reason for people to kind of not promote you and push you up. So I can really see that side. It's quite a difficult one, and what I don't understand is why it can't just be captured in sick leave.
One would hope, don't you think, that if you had that problem, that you would have a sympathetic boss that you could go to and just say quietly, look, you know, I'm really feeling rubbish, I need to go home, without having this sort of law saying 3 days a month for everybody. Mm-hmm. Apparently it happens in some Asian countries, I read, but Spain is really at the forefront here. And I do feel that there is a worry now, because everybody's also talking all the time about the menopause and having time off for the menopause and having time off for maternity leave and having time off for period pain. You'd think you've got two candidates for the job. You've got a bloke sitting there and a woman sitting there, and they both have equal qualifications and ability. You know, this guy is going to be far less trouble.
It's a worrying prospect, isn't it? It's another reason for a man to be chosen over a woman. It's a difficult one. I mean, I don't see why, as you say, Mary, if someone is suffering with any kind of health issues, it shouldn't make a difference whether it's a headache or period pains or whatever. You should be able to go to your boss, whether it's in person or on the phone that morning or whatever, and say, listen, I'm in pain here, wherever the pain may be, and be able to get the time off work. Yes, I think sadly it could be one of those things that, unfortunately, could be a system that could be abused. I mean, it's hard. You can't prove a headache either, can you? You know, there's a lot of things you can't prove. But I fear that, sadly, some women may go, oh, great, I can use that as an excuse to have time off work, which is awful. And I hate that I'm thinking that, because I know that plenty of people, myself included, have suffered with this. And therefore, this is a great kind of thing to happen. So it's really difficult.
Do you think there's also a bit of a worry here, too, insofar as I'm quite sure that, you know, during those 3 days, you know, you don't feel 100%. You're not doing your best job, for sure. If you're in a position where you're having to take, you know, huge decisions, you're a politician, you're a judge, you're playing, whatever it is that you happen to be doing, and the same with the menopause too, you know, going through all of those issues, that perhaps you're not doing your best job, and perhaps it is a bit of a worry. I mean, would you worry if the person flying your plane was maybe having an off day? Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sure men can have off days too. Just
100% they can. Periods. Of course they can.
I think everyone should just be entitled to 3 days a month of an off day.
Yeah.
For both men and women.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter
not?
The age, whether you have periods or not.
Yeah. I'm
not sure about the whole labelling of it.
No.
You know, three. Oh,
can I like can the labelling of an off day?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I'm having an off day.
Yeah, I'm having
an
off day.
Into, I like
okay,
that.
That's off day number one for this month.
I think that works well with all the mental health talk and issues. I think that's a damn good idea.
Everything, can't it? Let's be honest. Yeah. An off day. Brilliant. We'll take a break there. We'll have an off couple of moments.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with me in the studio today, Katie Wells, Debbie Ball and Mary Harbo. There's an article here that with the headline, "Want to see my furious face? Tell me to cheer up." Those of us born with an angry resting face don't need to be reminded of it constantly. We find the observation positively offensive. It would be lovely to beam like Little Miss Sunshine all the time, but without resorting to cosmetic interventions, that's not going to happen. So there's no need to draw our attention to the fact. Yes, it is rather annoying when someone says, cheer up, it doesn't happen to me a lot, to be honest, because I do think I am quite smiley. But in general, when it does happen, it doesn't really have a positive effect, does it? It kind of makes you want to hit the person, maybe.
Yeah. It certainly does.
Any experiences in that?
I hate that one. What's wrong with you? Nothing. Are you sure? Yes.
Yeah.
No, really, what's wrong? Nothing.
Wrong? Yeah. Yeah, then you end up saying...
But now like, there is.
Exactly. Your voice raises and they go, see, I told you there's something wrong. Really annoying.
I think I've been asked a few times, why are you so upset? I think especially as a child. But you look really sad. What's the matter? And I think that's just my thinking face. You know, like, right. Can you put a little bit of a frown on?
Yeah.
I can't. I don't have it anymore because I have Botox. That makes me look happier.
That's there you go. Problem solved for everyone with a resting face.
Yeah, exactly. Get Botox. This one, what happens when an Instagram influencer stops pretending life's perfect and shows things as they really are? This, I thought, was fascinating. We're used to seeing people on Instagram, women particularly, and everything looks perfect from their homes to their hair. And this woman is showing things as they really are. And I love that. I follow a few people like that who... a lot of people who, which I think is really fascinating, show you with their bodies. So they'll be wearing a bikini, for example. They'll sit a certain way and show you how amazing their figure is. And then they'll sit another way and you'll see that they've actually got a bit of a pot belly. They've got cellulite and they're actually really showing you. It's all to do with the angle that you're sitting in, how you position the bikini on your body, all that kind of stuff. And it's fascinating. I think it's brilliant.
Yes.
I think it's brilliant. I'm sure those pictures still don't work for me, though, even when I try the other poses.
I know, and I need to try it, actually. I keep thinking I must try it, but yes. Yes. But, I mean, people are too perfect online, aren't they?
Well, I mean, we're all not teenagers. But I do think from a teenage perspective, you know, thinking back and looking at these pictures, I think that's where the damage can be done. Mm. You know, when life looks so perfect and everybody else is having this amazing life, but not me, you know, and I'm missing out. And there is that fear of missing out. And I think it's such a shame. And so very sad, really, for young people to feel like that. I mean, we can sort of take it well as what it is and think this is fun, and it is fun, and it's really good, I think, to see that. But I think it would be nice to see it a lot more with young people as well, for the young people who are following.
Yeah
I think it's really good. I've noticed a lot more. I'm not massively on Instagram, but now and again when I go on, I've seen a lot more celebrities. I think, is it Drew Barrymore? I think I've noticed that she's been doing a lot more natural. You know, she doesn't wear makeup. She's just making something in the kitchen. She's just cooking. You know, she's just showing real life.
Real life, yeah.
Not this pretense that has been displayed for the past 10 or 15 years since social media has been around. And I think for the younger girls and boys as well, like what you've just said, it's so important to realise that, you know, that isn't real life. The makeup, the beautiful homes, like you said, you know, the perfect hair. It might be for when they're just about to go onto a movie set and they've just had the hair done and the makeup done, you know, but it's... So, yeah, no, I think it's good. I think it's great, and I think we should see more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's fantastic. I mean, I've got a 14-year-old daughter, so she's, like, right in the middle of that world. And, you know, the shots and the snaps that she's taken and the TikToks and the Instagram pictures, and, you know, I mean, I can't even keep up, if I'm being completely honest. But, you know, it is, they're so influenced in how they want to look and what they want and, you know, what they aspire to be. And in some ways that's great, because they have, you know, much higher aspirations than perhaps when I was a child, because they can actually get visibility into another world, if you like, a parallel world that lives alongside. So there's some good things to come from it, but I do think it's fantastic that we get that other viewpoint, that actually this is real life, and this is what I do look without my makeup, and, you know, and this is what I do look like in a different pose, and, you know, that kind of other view. Because there's some scary things that are out there. I was telling the ladies earlier, there's an app that I saw that you know, you can put your face up and then the next minute you're like this beautiful, gorgeous model. It takes all your features. But
sounds great.
Yeah. Which app's that?
I'll show you later. But whilst there was a woman on there and was like, oh my God, this is amazing. Look at this picture, blah, blah, blah. And then it flicked to who it was previously and it was a man. So then you start to think, my goodness,
yes.
Catfish.
Oh, definitely. But the thing with the homes, you know, this is something that we can relate to as, you know, not for, for teenagers, for older, well, I call myself an older woman, but, you know, not a teenager, looking at people's homes. And, you know, you see all these perfect houses and all the perfect ornaments and everything all perfectly clean and tidy and everything. And there's been a lot of things I've seen where people have posted a photograph where everything looks perfect in the phone, but then they've done a real photo, you know, an Instagram versus reality type thing, and they've moved the camera just a meter to the left and there's kids' toys everywhere, there's like a table that needs to be cleaned because there's some red wine stains on it, and you just kind of think, oh, thank goodness.
So is there
the home isn't perfect.
Is there a filter for your house?
Oh, that would be good, wouldn't it? That would be really good to get rid of all mess. I wonder what it would look like.
We need to get one of those VR things, don't we? Yes. It just has a wonderful picture of your home in it that you can...
I think when we were all working from home too, that was a really bit of a wake-up call, because when you saw all the interviews and everything of people zooming and what they had behind them, it was often fascinating.
Yes, all the books.
The books, yes. What they're reading, where their ornaments are.
Yeah.
And it's surprising the people who didn't really bother.
And it's disappointing.
Yes.
It was really interesting having a nose at all the books. Absolutely.
And they stand up and they've got the pyjamas on still.
Yes. I wonder how many people did it naked from the bottom down. Yeah.
Yeah. Really? Is that what you thought?
I did, yes. Not too much.
Not
too much. I did wonder.
That says more about you, I think.
maybe. This one is talking about hugging. No matter how you're feeling, having a good cuddle is a surefire way to achieve an instant sense of calm and well-being. But it appears the benefits of hugging are far greater in women than in men. Some people really like hugging and some people find it really uncomfortable. As women, do we think we like hugging?
I think since the pandemic, I mean, that was something, I think one of the things we missed more than anything else was that human contact, that hug. I miss them a lot. I think I'm a huggy, touchy, sort of feely sort of person. But now you don't really know what the etiquette is anymore, because some people don't want.
Yes.
And there's a whole new dimension there. But I think in that article it says that the ideal hug is 7 seconds, which is quite a long time.
That's quite a long time. Yes,
that's body to body.
Time. Yes, exactly.
Arm to arm.
It's a really long time. Every so often, I sort of feel like a hug should feel really natural, and there's a kind of natural moment to kind of pull away. Very rarely do I find myself in the situation where I'm thinking, okay, that's it. I need to move now, and they're still kind of clinging on. It doesn't happen that often, I don't think.
Maybe you give them the look.
Yeah, exactly.
Enough of the hug.
Keep it short.
I'm not a hugger.
Are you
not? Sorry, no, I'm really not. And that makes me sound so cold, doesn't it?
No,
and I'm really not a cold person, but my daughter's always saying to me, can I have a hug? Because I know that it sounds so bad, doesn't it? She's very spilt and lovely, by the way. but I'm just not a hugger. I don't know. I don't know. I just find them quite uncomfortable.
Okay, interesting.
Stay out of my personal space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit the same, actually. I like a hug from my fella. Yeah. And I like to give my boys a hug now and again. But I'm not... I think if it's people that you haven't maybe seen for a while, you know, I think it has to be natural. And you kind of got to really want to give somebody a hug.
Yeah.
I think just giving someone a hug for the sake of giving them the hug, it makes me feel a bit like,
Yeah. It's like there's greeting kisses, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, it's always this issue of whether you do or you don't. Yeah. You start left and right and then you go to left.
Did you one? Did you two?
Well, in Holland, you do three.
Yeah.
And there's always this issue of you start left or you start right and you get your nose is caught in the middle. It's really awkward.
Yeah, you see, I've not missed that at all. Like pre-COVID, with the whole two kisses. Again, if it's a really good friend, then I think that's okay. But like, for example, I was in real estate, and you'd be meeting people. I've never even met them before, and they'd be there wanting, you know, to do the kisses. And I was never comfortable with that. So when kind of COVID hit, and obviously that wasn't, people didn't want to do it and it wasn't allowed, and I was like, yes.
Oh,
I'm kind of all for that.
That's interesting.
I've never felt comfortable.
See, I'm more likely to do the mwah, mwah with people I don't know so well, and then I'm more likely to hug a friend.
Okay, yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I don't really think about it, but making myself think about it, if it's a friend, whether I've seen them recently or not, it sort of feels more natural to go in for a bit of a hug and a squeeze, whereas if it's someone that maybe I'm not as close. I don't know.
I'm glad we've had our greeting already.
Yes,
this would be very awkward if we were now about to say hello.
Yes.
Well, we all gave,
didn't we?
We hugged.
I did. Yeah. I'm feeling maybe I got that wrong now. Did she give me the look that it was too long? Did I get the look?
It was a great hug. I enjoyed your
hug. Thank you. No uncomfortableness.
Yeah. No, I'm like, phew, we had a hug.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, ladies, I didn't hug you. It was the first time I met you.
No, but you were giving out definite no hug vibe. Yeah. As I have to say to my right as well.
Oh, I was giving the icy look.
No hugs here.
How funny. This is a picture of a policeman wearing his policeman helmet, which is covered in rainbow colours, which I think he saw. The article talking about it was really quite strange. It says a police force was accused of putting its woke agenda ahead of crime prevention yesterday after tweeting photos of a senior officer in a rainbow helmet. Superintendent James Sutherland was wearing the ever so colourful headgear on patrol in Cambridge. Critics hit out at the stunt with comments including, "Where has the neutrality gone? And how about tackling crime instead of virtue signalling?" Another said, "A woke photo opportunity. The public would just like the police to police." And a former Met officer wrote, "We were not allowed to wear personal pin badges. How are police now allowed to promote some groups above others?" Cambridgeshire police uploaded the photo on Monday to coincide with the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia and Biphobia. I thought this was really, really interesting because I thought, oh, what a lovely colourful hat. Mm. But then It's not normal, is it? I mean, all the hats are supposed to be the same. He's obviously making a statement by doing this, but the fact that it was linked to the International Day Against Homophobia makes me think he was probably just getting the photograph done inside. We don't know whether he was actually walking around town doing police work wearing that hat. So if that's the case, then I think that's fine.
Well, I think if he was walking around with that hat on, hugging people, then the children would not be scared of them. But no, I'm not sure. I've not actually really read much of this article, but it's there's a uniform. There's a uniform for a reason. Was this just a one day event that he wore this?
Well, yeah,
this
exactly. And it doesn't even say whether he was actually walking around the Cambridgeshire in the Cambridge in the city with this. I don't know. I don't know whether it's all kind of been blown out of proportion. As you say, it's a uniform. So whatever kind of agenda or he's trying to say, he shouldn't come out of his uniform.
No, I just think that we need our police to be police. They should be fighting crime. They should not be giving political messages. They should be apolitical in their whole outlook to their work. I think, this is a UK story. I don't think it would actually perhaps happen here in Spain. I don't know.
No,
but certainly there have been issues of this. I was reminded when I saw this of a National Trust story that happened about 2 or 3 years ago in Norfolk, where I live, where everybody who worked and volunteered for the National Trust at this particular property had to wear rainbow lanyards to show their support of LGBTQ plus.
Yeah.
If I get the word right.
Yeah, that's all of them. Yeah.
Because of it. And that is not the job of the National Trust.
No.
You know, they're there to look after our history. And I think the same with the police force. Mm. You know, let him wear his normal Bobby uniform and get out there and fight crime, which is going up no end. I mean, you can't get any police people to come and help you if you have your car stolen or your bicycle stolen or the rest of it. So their job is not to politicise.
Yeah.
They're not thought police. They're,
their job is to police.
I think you're right in that they should have a uniform that is, you know, one fits all and it's black and it's, you know, it doesn't really say much at all. But, you know, this was in link with an international event. It's a one-off thing. And I think, you know, there's so much negativity sometimes around the police that you hear that, you know, you know, that they're racist in some form or other, which is not right. And as a force, they shouldn't be. So, you know, in a way, whilst I do take your points on board and I think they're really good and true, I do think it's actually great for something like this to step up from within the police force, you know, to be we're not all kind of racist against, you know, colour or sex or whatever it may well be.
It shows it in a positive light, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It really does. And it's a good message to obviously for young people or old people or whatever, that to be more inclusive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it should be something that they do all the time.
No.
But you know, as a message that come out linked in with an international event, I think it's quite a strong message. But I do think they should wear a uniform most of the time.
Yes. Thank you, Debbie.
You're welcome.
Hannah Murray, TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Women Talk with me in the studio today, Katie Wells, Debbie Ball and Mary Harbo. There's an article about Jo Brand, the comedian Jo Brand. She says, TV bosses wanted me to ditch bother boots for stilettos. She's famous for her self-deprecating jokes about her appearance, but comedian Jo Brand has revealed that TV producers tried to make her look more feminine when she starred on screen. She said she often overheard studio staff discussing how they could make her pretty as she prepared to face the cameras. Do we think that makes perfect sense because it's television, or do we think that's completely unfair because that's not her look?
Completely unfair. Because that is her look. That's how she is.
Yeah, exactly.
100% unfair too. And I think really cruel to do this and for her to overhear that just before she goes out. Because apart from anything else, she's human and she has a sense of style. But nobody wants to hear a conversation like that sort of just before you're going on camera.
Not good. And I don't think it would happen in the same way to a man.
No, exactly.
At all. You know, let's handsome him up a bit. I mean, it's just not going to happen. They're not going to... It just wouldn't happen in the same way.
It wouldn't happen at all. And I think it links back to the Instagram story that we were talking about earlier as well, isn't it? Where, you know, let's move forward in a world where be real and let's all be ourselves and, you know, and be able to stand proud of that, you know, just because she's not a typical, you know, skinny blonde or whatever, you know, why should she be prettied up? She's got so many strengths and characters in her own right.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty shocking.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because being on television, obviously, you are being looked at because it's a visual media, but there's a difference between having to have TV makeup, as in making sure, you know, you're not, don't look too pale or whatever, than going completely over the top and trying to change your... I mean, some people would want to, you know, some people are quite happy to have loads of makeup and fake this and fake that and look as best as they possibly can. But if people don't want to, they shouldn't be made to.
Not at all.
I mean, who could ever imagine or even visualise her in stilettos?
I know.
She'd look hilarious.
It would just be bizarre.
It wouldn't happen, would
really
it?
Really odd.
Not everyone can wear them either.
No.
No.
Don't they? Not everyone can walk in them.
No, exactly.
I certainly can't.
I'm not sure I want to wear stilettos on the telly, actually.
I live in trainers.
Thank goodness we're on the radio today.
Yes, absolutely. Weddings. This article written by the lovely Samantha Brick. She says, there's no shame in jilting your friends' weddings. She says she's refused 12 invitations, even though some of the brides never spoke to her again. Weddings can be expensive, as in going to a wedding. You know, depending on where it is, you may have to fly. Obviously, if it's in another country, you'd want to buy an outfit, you'd want to buy a present, etc., etc. Accommodation, possibly if you're going somewhere away from home. It can be really expensive. Obviously, if it's for a really close friend or a family member, as long as you can afford it, you're going to want to go and make it happen. But since COVID, a lot of weddings have been cancelled and postponed, so people are finding themselves invited to a lot of weddings. So do you mind me saying that you're getting married soon?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely fine. That's
which is
no
really exciting.
It is, and it'll be the third time lucky. not my third wedding, but no, the third time of me trying to actually get it done, obviously, yes, with COVID. Yes. So yeah,
I'm glad
so
you made that clear there.
Yeah, I
was thinking,
my God, yeah.
She's young for three. Yeah.
My eyes were literally popping out, like, she's doing it three times. What?
No. This will be my second wedding.
But third time, because of COVID, it kept getting...
we've had to really limit. I feel bad. It's kind of the opposite, really, of what we're kind of discussing here, was that I'm really limited as to how many I can kind of invite. Yeah. And obviously, those that are travelling in are going to take priority as to who kind of comes to the day.
Yeah.
Because obviously, I'm not going to expect people to come all the way over from the UK and just be there for the evening for a few drinks, you know. But no, I haven't really had anybody, I haven't really invited anybody, and they've said that they're not coming. It's kind of been the opposite, really. I'm kind of like, I'm really sorry. Well, fortunately, we just have a small number coming over, and it'll be nice, it'll be intimate, and so let's hope.
Have you ever not gone to a wedding? Have you ever declined?
I don't think so. I think I've always gone to weddings.
Really? I have loads. I mean, to be honest, most of the time it's been in the UK.
Yeah.
And it's been, I don't want to say distant family, but yeah, distant-ish, you know, second cousins. Or even first cousins, to be honest. I've only got two first cousins, and I don't think I went to... Oh, yes, no, I did go to one of their weddings. But no, it's... Depending on the situation, sometimes it's literally about money. That's the thing. Is if it's in another country, particularly, it's the cost of flights. It's whether the cost of accommodation, where you'll be staying. It's getting the time off work. It's all that kind of thing, and it often ends up being a really expensive thing to do.
I can't believe I've just forgotten something. My best friend that I grew up with from school, she moved to San Diego, California. And she got married, and I think it was in the same year that I moved over to Spain, and I was on my own with my two boys, and there was no physical way that I could get there, either financially or anyone to look after my boys for me.
So
that is one that I didn't go to, and absolutely broke my heart. I mean, I cried like literally non-stop all day, and they were videoing it for me so I could see and everything. So that came down to finances, where I couldn't go.
I think you're right, though. At the moment, there's, you know, all those weddings like yours, you're saying you've tried three times now. You know, there's going to be so many this year. And next year, I mean, I know friends who've got PR companies, and they're saying that, you know, they're just run off scale at the moment with the amount of people that are wanting to get married. And, you know, you couple that with the rate of inflation and, you know, the cost of living at the moment. It's tough, isn't it? Nobody's inviting me to their wedding at the moment, but I don't know anyone that's getting married.
I think
add lots and lots of invitations, you know, it's got to be difficult. And how do you choose one over the other? Oh my God, the stress of that.
Yeah, exactly. And people see, you know, I'm sure we've all experienced the whole thing to do with priorities. You know, when you've got a certain amount of money, a budget for each month or whatever, if you say that you can't go to something for a money reason, you know, I'm really sorry, but I'm watching my pennies at the moment or whatever, and then the next minute people see on social media that you've gone to Paris for the weekend, or you've gone skiing and or wherever, something that would have cost money, it's very easy to be self-conscious and think, oh no, well, they think that skiing was more important than going to their wedding, I can obviously afford to go to Paris. But, you know, you're kind of watched all the time. If you're posting on social media, of course, you're watched all the time. So it's easy for people to judge how you're spending your money, I think.
Absolutely.
I know in the UK that there is a huge backlog of people who want to get married, and if they've just decided quite suddenly that they want to get married and they hadn't sort of booked the registry office, I only know for the actual area where I live because I'm a celebrant there, you can't get a wedding slot in a registry office just in our area at all until next summer. You can get something in the middle of winter, maybe a cancellation, but you certainly can't get this summer, because I do know of couples who've really wanted to get married this year and can't do the legal bit. They've had to travel to another area to be able to do it because the registry offices are fully booked.
Yeah. How has it been for you having to reschedule so many times?
It's been a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's been really stressful and quite upsetting, really. So because the first time round when we were meant to do it, quite a few people had booked flights.
Oh.
And then literally a week before, I think, the UK announced, or it might have been Spain had announced, that they weren't allowing anybody to fly in. So it was just a nightmare. So cancelled that, and then we tried to rearrange it again a few months later, and then literally it happened again that people weren't allowed to come in. So I just said, that's it, I've had enough. Oh, let's just put it all on hold. And then, yeah, things started to ease at the beginning of this year. So I just said, right, June, those that can come, we do it. Those that can't, or for whatever reason, that's it. We're just going to do it. Even if it just ends up being me and you and the kids and the dogs.
Yeah.
That's it.
Brilliant.
I think we need to start up an app to Zoom your wedding.
Absolutely. Right, we've got one more ad break.
Hannah Murray. TRE in the afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the last part of Women Talk. With me in the studio today, Katie Wells, Debbie Ball and Mary Harbo. This is a very, very interesting one. The headline reads, "Should I have told my dying friend her husband was having an affair?" Now, I think this is an interesting subject without the dying bit, to be honest. The whole idea of whether you should get involved if you know that someone's having an affair, would you kind of get involved and tell someone that you know that's going on? I think that whole subject is a real scary situation, you know, how... whether it's a, you know, if it's involving a good friend, you'd sort of feel like, well, you absolutely want to tell your good friend, but you could end up totally being the bad person and ruining something that, I don't know, the whole thing scares me, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Has anyone been in this situation in any way?
My ex-husband had an affair on me, and would I have liked someone to tell me? Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's interesting, that's what people say.
Would I put the shoe on the other foot, be the one that would want to tell someone? Absolutely not.
No, it's true, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really difficult. It's really difficult because you put your friendship on the line as well, really,
exactly.
Don't you? I think really a better thing would be to speak to the person having the affair.
Yes, I agree.
And tell them.
Tell them
if
that
you don't
know.
Tell them, I'll tell them, or something of that ilk.
Mm. Yeah. It's tricky, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if you don't say anything, the friendship thing could end up falling back on you. Because if they end up finding out that you know, they could be absolutely devastated. Why on earth didn't you tell me? You're my friend, and then you've got that.
Yeah.
It's.
I think if you're close friends, you have to. You have to.
Yeah.
As uncomfortable as it is, you have to, with proof, so it can't come back on you. I think perhaps if it's not such a close friend, I just think, oh, I don't know. Do you say mind your own business? I don't know. It's hard, isn't it?
Would you have been tempted, though, perhaps to shoot the messenger?
Exactly.
No, I'd have been tempted to shoot him. I still am.
Good answer. Right answer. Spot on.
Absolutely.
No, I think in this particular article, the fact that this poor woman is dying, she's terminally ill, my answer would be absolutely definitely not.
Yeah. Yeah, I
agreed.
100%.
What good can come of it?
You're none. Just none
exactly.
At all.
Yeah.
Nothing good can ever come of that.
No. So if she wasn't dying then, does that totally change?
It's a really tricky one.
Isn't it?
It's a really tricky one. I think if you really know that this is going on and your friend is thinking she's really happily married or in this happy relationship you know, and I love him to bits and isn't he just gorgeous, I think it would be time to say, well, look, you know, maybe you should just have a little bit of a pause here because maybe he's not quite the man that you think he is. Maybe he, you know, I think you can do it quite subtly rather than saying, hey, by the way, your bloke is bonking so-and-so.
Yeah,
you know, I think there are ways you could approach it which might be a little bit...
using certain language.
Would you appreciate it a little bit softer?
I just would have appreciated knowing.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm. I think I would just approach the person that was having the affair and say, you have to do it. And if they were adamant that they weren't, then I'd maybe secretly kind of film it on my phone or something and then somehow get that to her. I think actually verbally saying to a friend, I think if she's very close to death, then no, I probably wouldn't, to be honest with you.
That does change it,
doesn't it? What's
it
going to do?
Yeah.
But, yeah, if the person's well and alive and kicking and everything, then yeah, that person has to find out, but somehow. And I think it has to be down to the person that's having the affair.
Yeah.
You have to persuade that person to give them that information.
Yeah.
But like, I think if you as
or
a friend,
to stop.
Well, to stop, but then should they still know that it happened? I don't know. I think it depends on how long the affair's for. You know, I mean, I had a...
But you wouldn't necessarily know that, would you? If you saw... I mean, how would you know that someone's having an affair? If you saw someone just kissing someone else, how do you know whether that's the first time it happened or they've been doing that for 6 years? Well, there's so many questions.
I don't like this one.
No, me neither.
It's not okay. We'll move on. Sorry.
We've gone from weddings to affairs.
Sorry, Katie. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. It used to happen years ago, but it doesn't happen now. It doesn't happen.
I'm living in my little dream world.
Yes, you do that. It's shocking that a third of all children under six have a mobile phone. Kirsty Allstop wrote this article. She says, we parents must protect them from big tech. One of the things about this is the pressure, I imagine, that parents are under. If kids are saying, oh, my friend's got this, it must be really difficult to kind of say, well, you're not having it, if everyone in their class has got it. But I think having a mobile phone at the age of six, wow.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. So what age do children get mobile phones now?
I don't know. What you?
My boys were probably about 8, 9.
Really?
Yeah, but because I moved to Spain and the boy's father lived in the UK,
right.
We didn't particularly get on too well. For me, it was a nice way for the boys to still have kind of maintain some communication.
Okay.
So that was really the only reason.
Yeah.
And to be quite honest, they didn't really use it. I mean, it was even, nearly 10 years ago, so the phones weren't anywhere near as advanced as what they are now. And there was certainly none of the social media. I mean, they weren't allowed any of that.
No, okay.
It was literally for text messaging or for phone calls or maybe a little game or something.
Okay.
But otherwise, yeah, I think over 12. I don't think any younger than 12, 13.
Yeah, really. Under 6 is crazy. Yeah. Who are they calling?
I know.
Well, I think they're just using it more as a kind of a smart device, aren't they, for their apps.
Games.
But, I mean, how ridiculous if they're sitting around watching Peppa Pig.
It's on their phone.
On their phone.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, that's an exaggeration because Peppa Pig's too young, but the next one up.
Yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I guess, you know, technology is still relatively new and a lot of people do shun it and, you know, oh, the kids shouldn't be doing it and they're always on their phones and, you know, and gosh, my daughter has hers permanently attached to her, so it does drive me crazy. But there is another part to this of, like, this is where the world is going. This is, you know, they're talking now about all these, you know, parallel universe and is it NFTs or NTLs?
Oh, NFTs.
You know, the new world is, you know, where the children are all talking together, gaming together, internationally. You know, so at some point, that's where the world is going and, you know, we can't stop that, really. It's already here, you know. So you kind of think, oh, well, OK, well, my child's not going to do that. They're not going to game with their friends. Therefore, they're out of that social group. Mm. Therefore, you know, do they then become a loner and they've got no friends? And
yeah,
so there's a point where they've got to be involved. Having a telephone and phoning people at six, I think, is bonkers. But, you know, actually being able to have some kind of, you know,
communication
into that world, but as long as it's monitored,
that's the thing. It's being, making sure you understand, you know, if it's easy as an adult, as a parent, grandparent, whatever, to kind of not understand and therefore think it's madness and not agree with it. But if you make a point of educating yourself to understand what your child has access to and making sure you're okay with it and you understand it, then that's different, isn't it? It becomes more acceptable, I guess.
I think it's nice also, though, that children need to, you know, have kind of installed on them from a young age how to actually socialise and have that contact with people, you know, and that it's not all through a virtual platform.
Mm.
So I think there has to be a limit. There really, really does. I mean, I certainly, if I had a six-year-old, I wouldn't let my six-year-old have a phone.
Mm.
I just wouldn't. I understand with what you're saying, and it is the future, and whether we like it or not.
I still wouldn't give it to a six-year-old.
Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and we have to accept, and our generation, my parents' generation, even maybe my kids' generation, you know, the generation below that, it is just going to be life, you know, that's how we connect and that's how we trade. You know, people are buying, I mean, what you're talking about, the NFTs. I mean, NFTs, it's virtual artwork. You can buy a virtual house. People are spending millions of dollars on virtual land that you'll never be able to stand on, or you will be in the virtual world. But, you know,
it's really weird.
And
it's
crazy.
And clothes and handbags, you can buy a virtual Gucci handbag for, like, hundreds of pounds.
Well, there was I'm sure there was a Gucci ghost bag that went for something like 10 million, which, so it's not even worth that in the real world,
no.
But obviously people are buying a part of it. Mm-hmm. But it's already happening with the kids. You know, what's that one, Roadblock or something?
Yeah.
No, it's not Roadblock. That's totally nonsense. Oh, I can't remember what it's called. It's one of the gamings that all the... Mm. You know, when my friends who've got little boys, and it's like, can I have £10, Mum, because I want to build this house, or can I have £20 because I need to build this house? And it's crazy. That's where all their money's going, on this virtual nothing.
The virtual world, yeah. It's like space, isn't it? It's just you're buying space.
I kind of feel that I'm very old-fashioned in all of this, but it would be much better if, for instance, at school, there was some sort of a lesson included. Because there was this issue about you couldn't call it maths anymore, you had to call it numeracy or something like this, because it upset people who couldn't do maths. But that there was a sort of an economic type lesson where you would learn to be able to control your money.
Absolutely.
And to budget your money and not get into a muddle with owing money here, there and everywhere. And I think that the example that you've given of sort of buying parts of virtual universes is it's a complete waste of money.
Yeah.
Mm.
I think it sends out the wrong message to young people.
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting point that you've made there. And I actually do think that schools, I think it's the one thing that isn't moving with the times and with the future, is how children are taught in schools.
Mm.
I really, really think that absolutely there should be more lessons and more information delivered at school regarding, you know, the social media and how to protect yourself. And maybe there is, I don't know, but I'm sure that there needs to be a little bit more information given to children.
It sounds obvious, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That there should be lessons on things like that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know why.
I remember when I left school and I didn't have a clue on how to write a cheque, for example.
Yeah.
I didn't know how to save money. I didn't know how to work out my ins and my outs and things like that. You know, and that's so important.
Or
that's,
how to get a mortgage or all of those like things that you need to do in life. You know,
absolutely. So. I remember thinking when I was younger, looking at my parents, thinking, gosh, you know, when you're older, you just know stuff.
Mm.
And then you get older and you kind of think, yeah, I still haven't learned that. You know, how do you know stuff? Unless someone tells you, you wouldn't know. And I think, yeah, there's definitely a lack of that kind of
conversely,
stuff.
Conversely, with six-year-olds having mobile phones, they're going to know way too much.
Yes.
Yeah, but not the practicalities of life.
No, exactly. Yeah. I'm being sarcastic. Yeah, way too much.
They won't know long division.
I was reading a column just very, very briefly about now saving money and not using your dryer, but hanging out your washing. And this columnist, I think it was Alexandra Shulman, she didn't know how the correct way to hang out your washing. And she was sort of asking the question. And this 90-year-old lady got back to her and said, if you wear it on the top, you hang it from the bottom. If you wear it from the bottom, you hang it from the top.
Oh, what a great piece of advice to end
on. I've been doing it wrong all these years.
Yes, exactly. Me too. I love that. I'm going to have a look when I get home. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in. Well done.
Thank you.
Wells, Debbie Ball and Mary Harbo. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you, ladies.
Thanks, Hannah.
You've been listening to a TRE production. If you've enjoyed this programme, there'll be another episode waiting for you next week, right here on this platform, where you can also access our extensive back catalogue of shows and interviews. For more information on our live programming, social media channels and apps, and how to contact Talk Radio Europe, please visit tre.radio.